Coming, everybody. I will start right away. No financial relationships to disclose. I will, though, give a caveat. You'll notice this fancy DartNet logo on all of my slides. It's not a public company or anything paying my bills. It's actually something I'll explain in a few slides. I'll keep you in suspense until then. But I am employed by the University of Colorado. I'm actually in the School of Pharmacy with a joint appointment in the School of Public Health. So I'm going to start by talking a little bit about just suicide and depression as a motivation for this talk. More than 34,000 people die by suicide every year in the United States. It's a rate of 11.5 suicides per 100,000 people. And it's the third leading cause of death among age 15 to 24 years old. Now, depression is a known risk factor for suicide, and depression is affecting up to 24 million people in the United States each year. And in fact, 60% of suicide completers had depression at the time they attempted. Now, the first line treatment for depression is usually an antidepressant. And between 2003 up to 2007, the FDA decided that black box warning should be put on antidepressants, warning about an increased risk of suicidality among pediatric and young adult populations up to the age of 24. Now, just to define suicidality really quickly, I'll mention this word quite often. Suicidality is defined as suicide ideation, which are intrusive thoughts about suicide, and suicide behaviors, including planning, preparatory acts, and attempt and completion. So the FDA decided to put this black box warning on antidepressants because of results of a meta-analysis, including 24 randomized placebo-controlled trials. Now, the problem is the results were a little controversial, and so studies need to be ongoing. There's a lot more to do in this field. The problem is it can be unethical to study the link between antidepressants and suicidality in an intervention type of trial. So what we really need are some better observational comparative effectiveness study designs. And that brings me to DartNet. DartNet is technically housed at the University of Colorado. It's an AHRQ-funded project. And it's a federated network of electronic health records data. It's linked across, at this point, 25 organizations. It's growing as we speak. It includes 1,700, if not more, clinicians and over 3 million patients. And it's a unique system that captures, de-identifies, codifies, and standardizes data from all of these different EHRs. Now, in addition to including the EHR data, we also have the ability to have linkages to other types of data sources. For example, point-of-care data collection from the patients and the practitioners in the visits. We can get medication fulfillment data. It's important to note that the EHR data only includes medications ordered. So based off of that, we don't know whether or not the patient filled. So we like to link in the medication fulfillment data. And finally, one thing we're still working on is getting claims data linked in, so we would actually have paid claims from insurance companies linked in with EHR and all of these other data types. So essentially, DartNet takes all the data, gets it loaded into a database that's available for fairly immediate query and then research use. And it's become a very powerful tool for comparative effectiveness and safety research. As far as collecting suicidality data, we really had one main way using just EHR data to identify suicidality. We have the ICD-9 and 10 codes from the EHR, and I've listed up here the attempts and the ideation codes. Ideation code's fairly new, so it hasn't really caught up to being used yet. As part of a recently completed AHRQ task order, we actually tested and implemented two new ways of collecting suicidality data. The first is the administration of the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, which is called the PHQ-9. It's a 9-item depression assessment survey tool that's administered to the patients. And the total score ranges from 0 to 27, and it can be used for various reasons. We can get the suicide severity score from that. We can get measures of effectiveness if we have more than one, if we have two or more PHQ-9s, we can look at how if their score is improving or not in response to treatment. But importantly, item 9 of the PHQ-9 asks the patient about frequency of suicidal thoughts in the past 2 weeks. 0 indicates no days, 1 indicates several days, 2 more than half of the days, and 3 nearly every day. So this gives us a measure from the patient about suicide ideation. And finally, this fairly novel technique, we have this history of present illness, the HPI field. It's a text field in the EHR. And it's where the doctor really enters notes about the visit and the patient. And we wanted to use natural language processing to search for these indications of suicide in the EHR. Now, I can't tell you a lot about natural language processing. I know enough to be dangerous. I'm not the person that runs the programs. But I can tell you that they essentially used an existing system to search for strings of characters. For example, S-U-I-C-I star would pick up suicide, suicidality, words like that. So they looked for a positive mention of suicide behavior, which would include attempt and planning or ideation, but they also looked for negation of behavior or ideation. For example, the physician may indicate that the patient was not suicidal, that the patient had not planned an attempt. We used four primary rules, positive and negative behavior and ideation, and then, positive and negative behavior, and then positive and negative ideation. We also had seven supplemental rules. They were common linguistic patterns, things that helped the algorithm really determine if it had happened recently or if it happened a long time ago. A lot of things you'll see in the EHR indicate that the patient had an attempt 10 years ago. We didn't want to code that for this study. So rules like that helped us weed that out. And we did train the system using human annotation. Me, other colleagues, we actually reviewed over 1,800 records of HPI, and we read through them, and we pretended we were the computer program, and we decided how we would code that record, positive or negative ideation or behavior. And there was a sensitivity ranging from 0.9 to 0.94, specificity ranging from 0.91 to 0.96, so fairly good. And as pilot data, and I'll caveat this whole thing, this is really a pilot study at this point, we processed almost 740,000 records of HPI. They were given to us by four sites. Only four of the DartNet sites contributed data to the pilot study. They covered up to 96 months of data. We had almost 400,000 distinct encounters, and that was for almost 26,000 subjects. So I mentioned a task order a little bit ago where we really introduced these two new methods of looking for suicidality. The main goal of that task order was actually to do an observational comparative effectiveness study of antidepressants used to treat depression. And we first had to identify a cohort of depressed subjects for that study. We used only their EHR data and we used TDSC criteria. And we identified ICD-9 codes of 296.2 and 296.3, which are major depressive disorder. We also included 300.4 and 311. And we found 61,464 subjects with a new episode of depression. Now, when we went ahead and matched those patients with available HPI data that had been processed through the NLP, we found 14,597 patients that had HPI data processed through that algorithm. That was about 405,000 records. Now, of those patients, almost 4% had a positive mention of a behavior and ideation, and almost about 14% had a negation of suicidal ideation or behavior in their text field. We drilled a little further down. I mentioned the PHQ-9. We found a very small subset, 151, that in addition to having the HPI data available, they also had a PHQ-9 item 9 score. A lot of the practices, this is still a very new thing for them to be doing, so a lot of them will only store the total score of the PHQ-9. So now that we know the 9th item is very valuable to us, we're going to have to go back and kind of retrain and have them give us item 9. But we did find 151 people that had item 9 available. Among that 151, almost 7% had a positive mention of behavior ideation. And among the same group, almost 5% had a PHQ-9 item 9 score of 2 or greater. And I'll remind you, that's at least half of the days in the last 2 weeks. And we use that as a cutoff for this pilot look at the pilot data to really indicate clinically significant ideation. So what we really wanted to do was look at the overlap between these three methods of assessing suicidality. We were fairly comfortable with the fact that we weren't catching all cases of ideation or behavior just by looking at the EHR. A lot of the studies we've done have used strictly claims data, and we knew we were missing a lot in claims data because it's all about what the physicians bill for. And if they don't bill for attempt, even though that's why they were there, we'll never pick that up. So we wanted to get a better sense of how we could best get our hands on all of these suicide ideation and behavior cases. So we started by looking at the overlap of the HPI, that text field that was processed through the NLP, comparing it to what we found just in their EHR, so the ICD-9 and 10 codes. We had 537 subjects that had a positive mention of suicidal behavior or ideation according to their text fields. And among those 537 subjects, 12 also had an ICD-9 code indicating attempt or ideation. So it was a sensitivity of only 2.2%. Now, the specificity is very high, but that doesn't really tell us much. It basically tells us that those who did not have a positive mention of ideation or behavior, it doesn't say they had a negation, but they just had no positive mention. They also didn't have a record in their EHR. But that didn't make us feel much better about anything. So on the flip side, we looked at the nearly 2,100 subjects that had a negation of suicidal behavior in their HPI. So these are examples of the physician actually indicating, you know, they are not thinking about taking their lives at this point, or they did not, you know, that was not an attempt on their life. And of those people, only 9 had an ICD-9 code indicating suicide attempt or ideation, so it was less than 1%. So it's strange to talk about sensitivity or specificity when you're talking about the negation of something, but technically the sensitivity was very high for identifying people that were not suicidal using this HPI text field. And then the next drill down was really to look at the HPI versus that PHQ-9 item 9. And so we only had 7 subjects that had a PHQ-9 item 9 score of 2 or greater. And one of those people had a positive mention of suicidal behavior or ideation in their HPI field. So we had a sensitivity about 14%. Granted, these are very small numbers. We were only working with 151 subjects that had all 3 data elements available, but a specificity of 93.7%. Now clearly we don't really, you know, when you talk sensitivity and specificity, usually people expect you to identify a gold standard. And in this case, there's really not a gold standard. We're not sure yet which is, you know, which do we listen to. We know things are missed in the EHR, but we also know that people don't always fill out these surveys. You know, they may not divulge the information on the PHQ-9 that we expect them to. So I treated the gold standard both ways, essentially. The PHQ-9 first, and then treating the HPI or that text field as the gold standard, we found 10 subjects that had a positive mention in their text field, and only 9 of them, or I should say 9 of them, had a PHQ-9 score less than or equal to 1. So their PHQ-9 score indicated that they were not having suicidal thoughts, but they actually had mention of it in their HPI. So that was a sensitivity of only 10% and a specificity of 96%. So the sensitivity went down, the specificity went up a little bit. But I think when we got to this point, we really realized it's good to look at the overlap, that's important. But the whole point is to figure out the combination to use, not saying that we can use one over the other. So conclusions, it's pretty clear that suicidal behavior and ideation do not always get coded in the EHR or the claims for that matter, even though we know they're present. They show up in the text field, their doctor indicates that they were having suicidal thoughts, that they did attempt to kill themselves, but they never coded in the EHR for whatever reasons. But the patients also may not indicate on their PHQ-9 that they were suicidal. They may also get a code in the EHR, but then the doctor never puts it in their notes. So we know that we can capture this kind of behavior and these thoughts from the notes. It's feasible using this natural language processing. We also know that we can get some great data from the patients themselves through point of care data collection. So that's something we're really going to try to focus on in future studies. The biggest takeaway point, though, is really these methods cannot be substitutes for each other. We're not trying to find a gold standard where we know that all we need to do is run all of these records, these text records, through this fancy program and get everything we need. We really need to use all of these methods together to enhance the data for observational comparative effectiveness research. I will acknowledge Rodney Nielsen at CU Boulder is the brains behind the NLP by far, the natural language processing, Elias Brandt with AFP. David West is a colleague, he's the PI of DartNet, he's on the School of Family Medicine, and then my co-authors. Wilson Pace, Rob Balick, and Ann Libby in the School of Family Medicine and the School of Pharmacy.
Questions? I guess we're taking questions later.
Okay.